arrival was almost unspeakable.
We are all evil in some form or another.
I'm not guilty.
The dead won't bother you. It's the living you gotta worry about.
If I couldn't keep them there with me whole, at least I felt that I could keep their skeletons.
Hello and welcome to the Bad Taste Crime Podcast. I'm Vicky.
I'm Janelle.
We're back again.
Again?
Again. I know. Two Whoa. In a row.
Whoa.
Yeah. We're back again to talk about some crime. This one's going to be real fun. I'm excited.
I have to think. I guess my not so fun, but, you know,
that's
not depressing.
Fun.
So there we go.
pretty fun. Pretty fun. Yeah, we got a great show for you. We're here keeping warm. Janelle, if you could see us, like, in the studio.
We are wrapped in.
We're in the middle of full-on Midwest winter.
Yeah.
Remind me. I was at a wedding recently It was in Starved Rock in Illinois, which is like, it's like smack
crime
dab
place,
in the middle
yep.
of Illinois. Crime place, yes. And there were people from all over at this wedding. And I was out smoking a cigarette, was talking to a guy from New York. And of course, you know, it's like 33 degrees outside and we're out there with no coats because we've been drinking and dancing and whatever else. And I finally got cold and I said, I'm going in. Because I don't have a coat and this is Midwest chilly. And he lost it. He thought it was the funniest thing ever. So, yeah, we're on like full on winter mode. We got blankets. We're all.
But it's supposed to warm up in the middle of the week.
Cuddled up.
That's fun.
Oh, gosh.
46 degrees. Yeah.
The only thing to keep me warm are these stories of crime.
Ah, by the true crime fire with a true crime drink.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so let's head over to the newsroom then. Fit to breathe, our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad.
I don't know if I want to be in the newsroom.
Yeah, this is probably
too
the
much
most
news.
Too much, most depressing part of the whole episode. Likely, maybe we'll see what Janelle's. Well, no, you never know. Yeah. We tend to outdo ourselves when it comes to
we
the
do.
Sadness. But this week
we're so emo.
It's true. This week we are talking about the recent events out of Moscow, Idaho. Where at the University of Idaho, four college students, 20-year-old Ethan Chapin, 21-year-old Madison Mogan, 20-year-old Zaina Kernodal, and 21-year-old Kaylee Gonclaves.
Kales, last names are very hard.
So they were discovered at their apartment, all stabbed to death. Each victim was stabbed multiple times. The police have now come out and released some of the details from the autopsy, saying there was no signs of sexual assault. At least two of them had defensive wounds. They are thinking at the moment that they were stabbed in their sleep. There were two roommates that were home when the four students were killed. They have both been cleared. There's other videos. They said there's a person seen a video from a late night food truck that captured two of the victims before they were found dead. And apparently there have been some reports saying that some of the bodies were found tied or gagged up. They have said that this is inaccurate. So those reports are inaccurate, and that's kind of like where they don't have any suspects at the moment.
This is just kind of wild.
Thoughts?
It's just really bizarre.
Yeah.
The amount of people that were around.
Yes.
The amount of people that were still in the house alive.
Yes.
And then I was interested because there were so many fucking false reports of things. And someone posted a timeline of all the places that all four of those people had been in the hours up to them being killed. And they were, like, bouncing from parties to a restaurant to a party to a hangout session. So they were, like, all over the place.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was just – I thought it was really interesting because of how absolutely chaotic it was. And the, you know, instance of how it happened within your apartment. Like that's mortifying.
Yeah. Yeah. They've also said, I mean, there was a 911 call made at 11:58 a.m. When somebody called and said there was an unconscious person at the apartment, but it's unclear who actually made that 911 call. Mm-hmm. They don't know. As I was looking at this, I saw some 911 audio pop up, but who knows if that is legitimate or not. Mm-hmm. Because at least as of the writing of the article that I'm looking at, which is from NBC News, the investigators had declined to release the 911 call. So that's why I'm kind of like, that's probably nothing. Definitely a case we're going to be watching because there's a lot. I mean, it is very unusual. Mm-hmm. Like, and the fact that people were home.
Yeah. Which makes it even more bizarre.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. Like, I don't even want to theorize because... It just is. It's sad, first mm-hmm. of all.
Mm-hmm. But it does remind me of some of the cases that we've covered with break-ins in apartments and things like that. So that's
yeah. I know. And of course, Janelle messages us to me like a week after I'm moving into this new apartment. I was like, fuck.
You hadn't told me yet. And I was like, oh my God, check out the store.
Yeah. Don't worry. I already have plans to get a security camera and I lock my doors every time I'm there.
If you're ever worried, when my brother lived in Nashville, there were cases of people just kicking in doors, not doing anything, but just like kicking in doors because rowdy, raucous Nashville.
Oh, fuck.
So they do have things that you can like, kind of like, you remember those clubs for cars for the steering wheels?
Yeah.
Like that for the back of your doors.
Oh.
So it like is like a little ram basically that even if someone picks the lock or tries to kick it in, the door won't budge.
Yeah. Yeah. But then there's part of me that's like, if I'm like have to call 911 and someone needs to try to get into my apartment because I'm dying, I want them to be open to my door.
To figure it out.
Oh, okay. Oh, my God.
You need a little bit more equipment for that, like maybe something to cut the door.
Oh, yeah. Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. That's when the fire department comes in with their handy-dandy saws.
Yeah. So this is I think this is probably going to be a case that we will keep an eye on as things come out. Like, they're just – and understandably so. Like, you don't want to release all your evidence so that you have something to question people on when you have suspects come in. So, like, they're not going to release things that they feel are – extra important to the investigation. So mm-hmm. I'm sure there will be a trickle, a very light trickle of information.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to Netflix and Kill. This week, another HBO and Kill because they're killing it. And this one will be short because it's an update.
Okay.
we're talking about The Vow Part 2.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God.
I've been watching it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. Which, and as we record this, not all the episodes are out.
Yeah.
I think about half of it is out mm-hmm. at this point. However.
Vow-ever.
Oh my Sorry. God. So for those who don't remember, The Vow is a documentary series about Keith Raniere and the, we'll say, self-betterment program / cult / sex cult.
Wannabe Scientology.
Yes. Very. Yeah, it has a lot of similarities with Scientology. NXIVM.
Yes.
Is the name of it. And so Keith Raniere actually.
Which is an antacid pill.
NXIVM?
Yes.
Oh. Nice.
Every time I say it, yeah. I'm like, antacid?
But is it spelled with no vowels?
No, it's not.
And just let like NXIVM.
No. I'm just like, cool, heartburn.
Yeah. So Keith Raniere, I think in 2021, was convicted on multiple counts of things like sex trafficking and others.
Trafficking.
Yeah, I don't have them pulled up, but it was a lot of stuff. He's spending a lot of time in prison.
There's some fraud.
Yeah. So the first series is really pre-trial, just before they arrest. It's I think the end of season one is as they arrest Keith Raniere. Mm-hmm. Season two comes back and they are following the trial and the people who are out, the people who are still in that choose to speak with them, which mm-hmm. I almost find most interesting. Yeah, mm-hmm. Nancy Salzman.
Rolling up in there, pretending like Nancy nothing Salzman? Fucking happened.
Yeah, who
like,
is?
I was just here for a good time.
Literally, like his right hand started the company. Like it's her company. It yeah. is her company that mm-hmm. she started with Keith Raniere. And I do think that, and maybe I'm being fooled, but I do think there is a certain amount of stuff that was going on
that she wasn't aware
that
of.
She was not aware of.
She reminds me of just like the like classic sitcom mom,
mm-hmm.
who's like, what's happening?
Yeah. And I think maybe that's why, because I know, like, I have friends who have moms who are just like her.
Mm-hmm.
And the sort of, you know, even if it was maybe willful at times.
Yeah. But I would say with her relation, her daughter's relationships with him, she definitely turned a blind eye. Mm-hmm.
But I do think there was a certain amount of brainwashing and conditioning that she also went through with Keith and the way he treated people and sort of trained them to do whatever he asked of them.
I just was watching clips of him talking, and the entire time I'm like, even if I didn't know how much of a fucking idiot you are, if I heard someone talking like this, I'd be like, hard pass.
Yeah. I'd be like, you're a fucking weirdo.
How do people get excited about that?
Yeah.
And a man who plays volleyball that much?
Dude.
I'm sorry.
I mean.
Get a life. Get a life, dude.
I mean, we're going to disagree about that, but you know.
He played volleyball every single day.
I know people who play volleyball every day.
That's too much.
I play volleyball with people who play volleyball every day.
That is too much volleyball.
But not in a culty, weird way where after he scores a point, he's going around and kissing everybody on the lips.
Yeah, no. If a guy came up to me after I just like hit a ball, I'd be like, fuck you. I'm going to throw this ball in your face.
Yeah. It's definitely, I'm very much looking forward to the series completing and like watching the rest of it. There are
a lot of twists and turns.
Have
you watched the episode about the Tourette's research?
Yep.
Mind fucking blown.
Yeah, oh my gosh. They're just things that I feel like, even when we were like going through the trial, that have come out since that I just had no idea about.
Yeah.
And like that is one of them where they have a person who claims to have cured their Tourette's, which I'm
more
still...
More than one person.
More than one person, which I'm
multiple
still like...
Multiple people.
Can you just... Is Tourette's just a thing you cure? Like, is...
Well...
I don't... You know what I'm
they
saying?
They still have Tourette's, but they have cured the symptoms
of
Tourette's.
Yeah, which as... I mean, they have the one girl whose name I can't remember who basically said, yeah, they cured my Tourette's, but... I was so much more broken in so many other ways and had depression and anxiety and like, you know, was suicidal and like, yeah, that whole thing was bonkers.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely worth a watch. Like, and when I saw it came, I was like, oh shit, you know, like I didn't know they were getting ready to drop season 2 and it all happened. To me, the most interesting thing is the people who are still in and who are still very much like the things that they're saying about him, he didn't do.
I mean, Nancy Salzman said it too. She's like, what about all of the, I think she said thousands of people we helped.
Yeah.
Where are they?
Yeah.
And then they start talking to people who said that they were helped.
Right. And maybe on some level they feel like they were helped, but like, that still does not erase all of the horrific shit that he did.
And
the
I mean,
grooming and the branding and the...
Jim Jones. Look at Jim Jones.
Literally.
What he did before he started going off the rails doing drugs and moving his entire congregation.
Yeah.
Right? He was like the first...
He was a public advocate.
All-inclusive congregation. So things can have great intentions in the beginning and do help maybe a few people.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if the overall... issue is the people in charge doing horrible things to even a small fraction, I think that's greatly overshadows the good.
Yeah. So it's hard for me to hear these people be like, my life was changed because of him and I will always support him and blah, blah. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm not in that headspace. So maybe I just can't, I can't even like wrap my,
You know?
it's just wild. I can't even imagine like what is remaining, but you should definitely check it out. It's called The Vow Part 2. If you haven't watched Part 1, watch Part 1 on HBO. So good. It's so good. Again, HBO kings of documentary making. Okay, let's move on to our episode. I forgot to say this last time, but
content warning.
Yeah.
Content warning.
This episode may not be appropriate for all listeners.
Mm-hmm. We also forgot to say our names the last episode, too.
Yeah.
Which I'm now realizing.
Well, you said hi, Vicky, and I said hi, Janelle, and I thought
it was
fine.
We didn't like...
Yeah. Also, if this is your first time listening, a special hello to you.
Oh, my God. It's like we forgot how to podcast.
I know. I didn't say that last time either. It's fine. That was like our coming back from not having podcasted in like weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks.
Yes.
So
it's we
got to roll back into it. I don't even have my notes pulled up. Hold on. I know. This is how unorganized I am. Okay.
All right. And now we're back.
So if you have been paying attention to the criminal justice world at all.
Oh, I wish I wouldn't have to.
I know. There have been a few interesting things happening as of late. One of those was the trial of Daryl Brooks. Okay. Who drove his car through a Christmas parade last year in Waukesha, Wisconsin.
I shouldn't be laughing, but it's been a farce.
Yeah, the whole case, like...
It's been a farce.
The case itself is straightforward. Like, he did drive his car through a crowd of people.
Yep.
But what made it interesting is Brooks decided to represent himself in court.
Sorry.
He was not so successful.
There's so many feelings about this.
It was very much the sort of, like, sovereign citizen garbage. I applaud that judge for her patience, because, like, I mean, she was like, I think that judge did a very nice job doing what she needed to do. Yeah. But the guy was
off
not
his rocker.
Helpful to himself.
He was out of bounds.
Yes. Yeah. But it did get me thinking. Has there ever been a time that there's been a person successful in representing themselves in criminal court?
I feel like that's... How?
Yeah.
Is how I feel about that.
Civil court is one thing. Like, civil court is very common to see, like, pro se litigants who represent themselves. I see that at work all the time. Mm-hmm. Criminal court, not so much.
Whole different story.
Because their attorneys are like, don't do this. Yeah, don't. Because it's a terrible idea.
How many people have done it and it's been failures? Serial killers have tried and failed.
Yes. Yeah.
You're not as charismatic as a serial killer.
Yeah.
How are you going to get that far?
So this led me to find the story of this incredibly interesting person.
Oh, boy.
Have you ever heard of Jim Trafficant?
No, but that is an unfortunate last name.
Girl, strap in. Oh, I feel like you will love and hate this guy at the same time. Okay. Like, I feel like he's right up your alley in a way. Jeez. In a way, yeah.
Like how up my alley? Like,
you'll see.
Oh, God.
You'll see. Justin, you'll see. You'll see.
Okay, let's do this.
So, Trafficant was born and raised in Youngstown, Ohio.
Is that his real last name?
Trafficant, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Trafficant, Trafficant.
Unfortunate.
Yep. So, Youngstown, Ohio is...
Not the greatest.
Not the greatest. It is... Yeah, they kind of got the nickname of Crime Town.
Yeah. Ohio is a place.
Yeah, there is a good podcast series, I think, called... Crime Town USA, maybe? I don't remember, but you should check it out.
There's just too many.
Mark Smerling?
Smerling? Yeah.
Yeah. Love him. I've listened to some other podcasts he's done. Really good. Anyway, about Youngstown and Jim Trafficant, you should check out. But grew up in Youngstown, Ohio. After graduating high school, he went on to receive his bachelor's in education from the University of Pittsburgh in 1963. While there, Trafficant was the quarterback of the football team playing alongside Chicago favorite... Mike Ditka.
Oh, Ditka. It's all about the mustache. And the sausage.
He was drafted by the Steelers and, like, later tried out for the Oakland Raiders, but never played professionally. Later, Trafficant went back to school to get his master's in administration from the University of Pittsburgh and a second master's in counseling from Youngstown State University.
Oh, giving me PTSD with a double master's.
Yeah, right? I thought you would identify with it.
Don't do that.
From there, he went on to become the consumer finance director for the Youngstown Community Action Program.
Okay.
he was big into, like, the addiction space. He taught a bunch of classes on drug and alcohol dependency and recovery at YSU and Kent State, and became the executive director of the Mahoning County Drug Program from 1971 to 1981 before launching into his political career. That's right.
Natural progression.
We're talking politics today.
I thought you said that I would like him. You
just wait. Just wait.
God.
So Traficant became the sheriff of Mahoning County from 1981. Just hold on. From 1981
to
1985, where he endeared himself to the people of Ohio. He made headlines after refusing to carry out foreclosure orders on out-of-work homeowners, many of whom were like laid off from work.
Behind that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He'd make headlines again when he was charged with racketeering.
It's Ohio.
Yeah. So, and especially in Youngstown, Ohio at this time. Mm-hmm. So in 1982, Traficant was charged with participating in a bribery conspiracy in violation of the Racketeer Influenced and Corruption Organizations Act, or RICO, as most people know it.
RICO.
Yes.
That old chestnut.
So while running for Mahoning County Sheriff, it was alleged that Traficant accepted $163,000 in bribes between January and November 1980 from organized crime members Charles and Orlin Carabia, James Prado, and Joseph Naples Jr., who are all, and like the Carabia brothers and James Prado and Joseph Naples are like separate crime families, two separate ones. So both sides. The case was filed after the FBI received tape recordings of conversations between Traficant and the Carabias talking about the exchange of money. This is from a motion to suppress. He like filed a motion to suppress these tape recordings that the FBI had. Quote, the recordings were not made at the time of the alleged bribes, but were made approximately 1 month after Traficant's election and receipt of his last payment. During their investigation, the FBI actually approached Traficant to be like, are you doing your own investigation on the Carabias, like as your capacity in sheriff? Or if you're not, like, will you cooperate with us in order, like in exchange for prosecutorial immunity? So the FBI was like,
are you criming or not criming?
What's going on here? He initially helped, but then just like it sort of just dropped off. And so the FBI decided to prosecute him. This would be the first time that Traficant represented himself in court.
There's multiple?
Oh, yeah, girl. When the case went to trial, Traficant argued that the bribes were taken as a part of his own undercover investigation.
Okay, so he's going to play that card. Okay.
Yes, 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 yes. So in 2014, one of the jurors that had sat on the jury for this trial in 83 wrote a piece for the Tribune Chronicle where he remembered some of the like eccentricities of the case because this guy was like out there. And when you're talking like in a political sphere, like he seemed like he'd be a fun guy to hang out with at the bar.
Yeah.
You know, like that kind of thing. So this is what he said about the trial. Quote, in Jim Traficant's opening remarks, he stood directly in front of me as I sat in the jury box no more than 4 feet away. Looking me straight in the eye, he said, I fucked the mob.
Whoa. Whoa.
Yeah. The juror also said, quote, all the jurors, as I recall, were a bit annoyed at what happened when Traficant tried to present his closing remarks. Every time Jim would try to utter a sentence, the prosecutor would yell, objection. In his vast knowledge of the law, the prosecutor could easily cite many infractions that the amateur defense lawyer Traficant made in his closing remarks. So they were kind of like, you have this regular guy, some regular guy, and this prosecutor over here just trying to be all, you know,
prosecute-y,
high and mighty, you know, with his law degree.
Right? Like he studied for years to do this fucking job or something.
The trial ran for 6 weeks and it appeared that like the prosecution was not taking Traficant serious at all. They were just kind of like, this guy over here. The jury would ultimately vote to acquit, with the juror who wrote the article saying, quote, in the end, the jurors came to the conclusion that the prosecution had not proven its case. We couldn't put that man or any man in prison for 23 years with a $30,000 fine based upon what was presented to us during that trial, end quote. And with that, Traficant became the first and only defendant to successfully defend himself in a RICO case.
Oh. my God.
The only one.
A RICO case.
Ever. A RICO case of all things. So the RICO case definitely, like, raised his public image a bit. Like even the jurors at the case were like, he's just some regular guy trying to defend himself. This, like, kind of regular dude persona. Yeah. But also, like, sort of fighting the man, like, fighting the federal government.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Was, like, something the people really rallied behind him.
Yeah.
And they decided to elect him to Congress as a Democrat representing Ohio's 17th district. Mm-hmm. Okay. Although elected as a Democrat.
Oh boy. Okay.
Traficant, he had, like, a weird mixture of some more progressive and some more conservative policies.
Like a libertarian.
A lot more, I would say a lot more towards the conservative side, okay, especially as the years went on. Mm. Like later on, he would go on to vote for Dennis Hastert for speaker.
And white, like, men tend to get really conservative.
Would run as an independent and yeah. Mm-hmm. So he advocated for things like restraints on immigration, is very anti-immigration. Mm-hmm. And a lot of pro-life policies. He's very much like America first.
Would you think I like him?
Because of the way he's like, fuck the government.
I mean, there's lots of people who say fuck the government that are
in a really sassy, like, okay. Yeah.
I can appreciate the sass.
Yeah.
The rest I do not stand for. It will not stand.
Yeah, he did become... Just his attitude, I think, is what you could appreciate. He became incredibly well known for his rhetoric in congressional. They do these, like, 1-minute speeches where you can basically get up and talk about anything for 1 minute. And became this sort of, like, congressional jester almost.
Oh, boy. Yeah. I can get down with the ham.
Yeah. He often referenced Star Trek, and he would, like, punctuate, and you'll see this in a minute, he would punctuate his points with the phrase, beam me up. Beam me up, Mr. Speaker. You will see this. Because I found...
That's very funny.
I found a compilation video of, like, some of his speeches, and it's like this really... And some interviews from YouTube, from Roll Call. And I wanted to treat you all to this. It is kind of long. It's like 3 minutes, but... Okay. It is so, it's like encompasses really what trafficking is. It's so good. It's so good. Okay.
All right, let's go.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Am I different? Yeah. Have I changed my pants? No. Deep down, you know you want to wear wider bottoms. You're just not secure enough to do it.
Prove it, sucker. Prove it. Prove we're wrong.
Do I do my hair with a weed whacker? I admit.
Beam me up here.
Do I wear skinny ties? Yeah. Coach, wide ties make me look heavier than I am, and I'm heavy enough.
Are you going to resign?
Are you going to resign? I've never been a quitter. I don't think I'll quit now.
Mr. Gephardt said you should.
Gephardt has no balls.
Beam me up. I say it's time for Congress to shove these illegal tactics right up the assets of the IRS.
But I think it's time for our president, Mr. Bush, to say, read my lips, get out. What we're saying is, read my pocketbook.
Beam me up, Mr. Speaker.
It's time for President Bush to say, read my lips.
This president has gone from Disney to Spielberg. Looney Tunes to outer space, and he's not finished yet. I predict his next production will be a Stephen King thriller.
Since the bomb did not detonate, it was not deadly. Beam me up, Mr. Speaker.
News reports say, after a game-winning goal at a soccer match in Spain, a player celebrated by biting his teammate who scored on the genitals. Beam me up. Now, I've heard of high fives, back slaps, butt slaps, but ladies and gentlemen, this takes the family jewels.
God almighty here.
I yield back what has now become known as the big bite. Heavy enough to cause a hernia for the Jolly Green Giant.
Maybe it's the type of jobs that are being created. Check this out. How about a handkerchief folder? A drawstring knotter? A hooker inspector? A pantyhose crotch closer machine operator supervisor?
I'm a jackass.
A muff winder? A fur blower?
a whizzer operator, a brassier cup molder fitter.
I probably should have been a little bit more diplomatic.
How about a drawstring knotter? That's really a goal in life. Screw supervisor, nut former, ball sorter, needle straightener, bucket chucker, slitter, creaser, slotter operator. Don't laugh. These are all jobs listed by the Department of Labor.
He better help my district after I'm in jail, too, or I'll come visit him.
I'd have to say beam me up, and I think these screw supervisors all work for the Internal Revenue Service.
Show me the beef.
The Department of Agriculture has come to several conclusions. Number one, big farm animals produce more manure than small farm animals. And number two, manure stinks.
Well, I'm Congressman. You don't rape my constituents.
Beam me up, Mr. Speaker. $200 million to determine that manure stinks.
I think they should be handcuffed to a chain link fence, flogged, and all of their hearsay evidence should be thrown the hell out. And if they lie again, I'm going to go over and kick them in the crotch. Thank you very much.
So that's just
okay.
A little taste of Jim Traficant. A lot to unpack there.
Sounds like he's a professional wrestling promoter.
He does.
He sounds like, and not a congressman. He sounds like he is pre-attitude era fucking wrestling promoter.
Yeah, and he was like, he wore these sort of like flashy suits. You looked at me when he was talking about the pants at the beginning. It's because he wore like bell bottoms and a skinny tie, and like
so
was
not fashion.
No, okay. and
I was like, what the fuck is he talking about?
Yeah. he's just this sort of yeah. And beam me up, Mr.
I
Speaker.
Just, like, why did he start using that?
I don't know, but it became his thing. Mm-hmm. It was 100% his thing. And he would just say what he feels. And I was researching this and I was like, I wonder what like Jim Traficant would be like in the modern day space.
Yeah, I mean, all that was coming to mind was Alex Jones.
Yes.
He's Alex Jones.
Yeah. Yeah. He, you know, he is a character. Mm-hmm. He is, which is why I think I found this one so interesting, is because he is such a character, like mm-hmm. ripe for just quotation after quotation.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay. So other greatest hits include in 1997 when he said, I gotta see if I can do my best Jim Traficant
okay,
here.
Okay. Yeah.
Let us tell it like it is. When you hold the economy to your nosy, this economy does not smell so rosy. If there is any consolation to the American worker, I've never heard of anyone committing suicide by jumping out of a basement window.
That is some dad-isms, if I've ever heard them.
And if you want to know his thoughts on U.S. providing aid to other countries.
Oh, boy. Okay, here we go.
Quote, Russia gets $15 billion in foreign aid from Uncle Sam. In exchange, Uncle Sam gets nuclear missiles pointed at your cities, 2 tape decks, and 3 cases of vodka. Beam me up.
Tape decks. Cases of vodka. Oh my god, vodka.
Beam me up,
we don't
Mr.
even
Speaker.
Get vodka from Russia anymore. It's all made here.
Oh man. Okay, so Traficant was also a strong supporter of John Demjanjuk, which, if you are not familiar, he was a man who was convicted in Israel of being a World War II Nazi concentration camp guard. There's a great documentary about him.
He was a supporter. He supported
it? Yeah, he was a...
I'm going to have to hear the story
of
this.
No, this is where things get a little off the rail. There's a great documentary about John Demjanjuk called The Devil Next Door. It's on Netflix, that goes over all of this. Essentially, he was living in Ohio, just like working at a car manufacturer's place, like hanging out when all of a sudden he was arrested for being a Nazi. Yeah. So Traficant strongly believed that Demjanjuk was a victim of mistaken identity. And that is like,
okay,
the people, I support Nazis.
He was a good man who did bad things. I can hear him saying that.
Yeah. No, he thinks Demjanjuk was a victim of mistaken identity, which was the people who were kind of supportive of him. That was really the case that they were making, because there was some sort of sketchy evidence. You're talking to witnesses who are in their 90s, like trying to remember, you know, it was a very
there's no way to identify a person really back then because it was all papers.
Yeah. He also thought that the trial that he had been given him was unfair. Demjanjuk's conviction was eventually overturned in 1993. I don't think it had anything to do with trafficking. But he was then deported to Germany, where he died in like 2014, I think. Definitely a good documentary. Check that out. It was a I should also mention, I don't think I added this in my notes, but there was like some weird David Duke connection, which David Duke is like KKK straight up.
KKK all the way.
but like then that connection was denied by some people. But, you know, they're never going to be like, I support the KKK. I mean, they will now.
Well, it's supposed to be a secret.
I know. Anyway.
That's the whole point of the organization.
And I don't.
Was to be secretive.
I don't think necessarily that it was trafficking was supportive of David Duke, but like.
His ideology.
David Duke. Kind of latched on to trafficking and was like, this guy is our man. Mm-hmm. And I think that does sometimes happen to people who don't expect it.
Yeah.
Where they just start getting championed by the wrong by the people. Wrong. So it was a surprise to no one when, during an exhaustive corruption investigation in 2001, trafficking was once again implicated in taking bribes.
Once you bribe once, you gotta bribe again.
So this is from the appeal to U.S. v. Trafficant. The indictment, quote, charged that he violated the federal bribery statute, conspired to violate the federal gratuity statute, accepted an illegal gratuity, obstructed justice, conspired to defraud the United States, filed false tax returns, and conducted the affairs of an enterprise through a pattern of racketeering, end quote. So all different flavors of fraud. Once again, trafficant opted to represent himself against the federal government, hoping, I'm sure, to have the same luck as last time. Like, I beat the feds once. Let me do it again.
So easy. Rico.
Yeah. This time, he claimed this trial was part of a larger scheme for revenge after he had bested the government the first time around.
I mean, there could be truth in that.
Again, this is from the appeal, quote, the evidence presented at trial demonstrated, among other things, that while he was a congressman, trafficant demanded thousands of dollars in goods and services from businesses in return for official favors, including contacting the director of the federal aviation industry, the secretary of state, and the king of Saudi Arabia.
Whoa.
Paid inflated salaries to his staffers, who were required to kick back the difference to their boss, and forced his congressional staffers to bale hay, repair plumbing, and reinforce barns at his show horse farm.
What is with people who do crimes being so interested in fucking show horses?
Dude, I don't know.
It is a fucking thing.
I feel like, especially if you're a crimean from, like, the country or like the Midwest, like show horses are like the bougie thing to do, right? It's like your mansion or your Maserati or your, you know, like Rolex watch, I guess. Instead, it's a show horse.
So fucking bizarre to me.
Yeah. Now, according to the Washington Post, the kickbacks that he had required his staffers to pay went as high as $2,500 per paycheck.
Fuck. Okay.
Trafficant was tried before a jury of 10 women and 2 men. After 4 days of deliberation, they found him guilty on all counts. So now that he had this official conviction, Congress took their turn and moved to expel Trafficant, which is not something that happens very often.
Yeah, I've never even heard of that.
It can happen. But you got to do some real bad shit. After a recommendation from the House Ethics Committee, the House voted to expel Trafficant with a 420-1 vote. He was the second House member to be expelled for unethical conduct since the Civil War.
Okay.
The first one had to do with somebody in the ab scam like controversy, which was also like a bunch of fucking racketeering charges shit. Now, shortly after he was expelled from Congress, the court sentenced Traficant to 8 years in federal prison and $250,000 in fines. In 2002, Traficant went into prison where, upon entry, he had to reveal to the guards that he had been wearing a toupee. Like,
he was... Just like the small, stupid things. Yeah. Well, okay, okay.
Yeah.
Probably like with a metal clip or something. He's like, I can't bring this in here.
Yeah. And he was, like, kind of known for his hair because it was sort of a mop. Like, it was just kind of crazy. But it sometimes it was described as, like, high, like, bouffantish. And to find out that all this time it had been a toupee the entire time.
I mean, that must be a really good, like, wig maker.
Yeah. Or he just gets new ones every week.
Yeah.
With all that kickback money, I mean, that only the nicest toupees.
All day.
Oh, man. While he was incarcerated, Traficant actually attempted to run for another term in the U.S. House. As an independent.
Okay, that makes sense.
He lost, only receiving 15% of the vote, but he is one of only like a handful of people to run for federal office while incarcerated. So like, there's that, I guess.
Interesting. Yeah, that's interesting that you could do that.
I mean.
It's interesting that that's legal.
Yeah.
But if you have any sort of felonies, you can't vote. But you can run for office.
Yeah, right.
But you can't vote. Okay. Anyway.
After serving 7 years of his 8-year sentence, Traficant was released in 2009 and returned to Youngstown, Ohio. Many people were like still pretty supportive of him and hoped that he would run for office again. And he kicked around like the talk show scene, you know, doing sort of like
Sally Jesse Raphael,
yeah.
Jenny Jones.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
More like it was like the Tucker Carlson type.
Ah,
yeah.
Okay, so,
yeah.
Okay,
Fox and Friends.
Okay,
yeah, gotcha. Yeah. He didn't do those specifically, but it was like the local versions.
Gotcha.
Yeah, yeah. And he wrote a few articles and like op-eds and stuff before he decided to run for his former congressional seat again. This time out of prison.
Can't stop, won't stop.
Can't stop, won't stop. He was beaten a second time, but put up a slightly better showing with 16% of the vote.
How many more points is that?
That's a whole 1 point increase.
Whoa, I thought
one
so.
Point, yeah. In 2014, while Traficant was working on the farm, pulling a tractor into a pole barn, it ran into a steel blade and flipped, landing on top of the former congressman.
What a fucking way to go.
I know. Traficant was rushed to the hospital where he was sedated and monitored. Although, like, pretty much from the get-go, the outlook did not look super great.
Heavy as fuck.
Mm-hmm. It was later revealed that while he was driving the tractor, he had actually suffered a heart attack, which may have caused him to, like, steer into this blade that then flipped the tractor. Gotcha. Okay. And he would eventually die in the hospital on September 27th, 2014, at the age of 73.
73 and still man in a tractor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a Midwest boy.
He's something.
So that is the story of Jim Traficant and his one time success, being the only person to successfully defend a RICO case, but also just being pretty
fucking nuts.
Yeah. Yeah, that is definitely what drew me to this case, is like, he is such a character, just like not what you normally see, especially at that time in the early 90s when politics wasn't as fucking bonkers.
Yeah. I mean, it was subtly bonkers.
It was a different kind of bonkers.
It was more jokey bonkers, not this.
Beam me up.
We're in trouble.
Beam me up, Mr. Speaker.
Mine is not going to be as hilarious.
Oh, I love not being the one to bring it down for once.
It's
always me.
It's not gonna be that sad.
No,
it's not gonna be that
damn
sad. There's no death.
Oh, good.
So, I am going to look at a landmark case.
Okay.
That actually approaches this topic backwards.
Oh.
So okay. I'm looking at the landmark case Gideon v. Wainwright. When a defendant was forced to represent himself.
Okay, interesting.
And you're probably going, huh? How? Well.
God, old-timey politics and laws.
Yes, laws. Not the greatest.
Because I'm sure, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is like an old, old case, right?
Not that old.
How old?
But 1960s?
It's pretty old.
Yeah. Back in the heyday of the Supreme Court.
Oh, yeah.
This is going to take a look at how the Sixth Amendment wasn't applied justly. And you're going to be in for an interesting ride.
Oh, all right.
Here we go. Here we go. So Clarence Earl Gideon was born in 1910 in Missouri, and he had a less than average upbringing and was generally poor the entirety of his life. He began a life of petty crime as a teenager because, let's face it, Missouri is fucking awful.
Yeah.
And what else are you going to do? Crime, crime, crime.
Crimin'.
Mm-hmm. So he moved around quite a bit doing the crime thing. He was arrested several times for burglary, robbery, and larceny.
Okay.
All the heavy
hitters. Burglar, arson, larceny.
Mm-hmm. He was arrested in 1930 for a slew of crimes, but he was released after 2 years for good behavior. Because although he's doing the robbing, he's not necessarily a bad man.
A bad man. And you know what? That is not super uncommon.
Yeah.
Like, some people are forced to crime to
survive.
Mm-hmm. So, not necessarily a bad man.
Most of the stuff that he was doing wasn't hurting people.
Yeah.
And he didn't really have weapons. He was just stealing things.
Yeah.
So, if you weren't catching the time period in which he was released from jail, it was 1930s. So, Great Depression.
Oh, God.
So shit was fucked.
True.
And Gideon stayed in poverty. And so the only thing he was able to do was continue to go a-robbing. So that's what he did.
Fair.
Now, he moved around Kansas and Texas, and he got married a few times. But nothing really stuck because he was constantly going to jail for a-robbing. So these wives were like, I need a person who can go to work and support me because depression.
Yeah.
So, you know. Eventually, he got married to a woman named Ruth. This was his fourth marriage. And they seemed to be really happy, and he was beginning to be on the straight and narrow. He got a regular job as a bartender. Ruth had three kids previously with another husband, and when they got married, they had an additional three kids. So they had six kids fucking total that they had to take care of. So
I should never be so – like, I feel like back in the day – they just had a shitload of kids. And every time I hear how many kids people have, I'm always surprised. But I should not be surprised anymore because everyone had like 20 kids.
Yeah. So this is about the 1950s as well. So we're out of the Great Depression. So having kids isn't like a horrible strain. But if you're already kind of a little poor, it's not great.
Right.
So they got six kids.
Oh, my God.
He contracts tuberculosis and becomes bedridden for 3 years.
Oh.
Effectively putting him out of any way to work.
Yeah.
This left them back in the poorhouse. Six fucking kids.
Wow.
Tuberculosis.
Yeah.
Bedridden. Like, not looking great. He took up work on a tugboat for a bit, but that was not a well-paying job and also hurt.
Yeah.
So, if you remember, I've covered a lot of cases where people wound up working on boats. Poor on boats.
Yes.
It's a thing.
Yeah.
So, in the true fashion, just like the other people I've covered, he started to supplement his income by gambling.
Of course.
It's a cycle. I keep talking about it. Where is the research on the tugboat to gambling poverty cycle?
The tugboat to gambling fast lane.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So he's gambling on the side, still working on a tugboat, trying to make a little more money. That never works. Still fucking poor. So he turned to his old robbing ways. On June 3rd, 1961... Gideon was arrested after a witness said that they saw him walk out of the pool room with bottles in his hand. The pool room is the name of a bar.
Okay.
With bottles in his hand and what seemed to be pockets full of coins.
Okay.
It was alleged that he stole liquor and change from the jukebox.
Ooh.
Fucking narcs.
Yeah, right.
Now, Gideon was poor as fuck, and he could not afford a lawyer.
Okay.
And at this time, they
were living... Indigent defendants?
They were living in Florida. So,
okay.
Florida, not great with people's rights.
Still. Still.
So he couldn't afford a lawyer, and they would not provide one to him.
Okay.
We're just going to sit with that for a
minute. Yeah. I know. I'm trying to remember. This is pre people having rights, yes, in general.
So Gideon was forced to defend himself in this case. And he had dropped out of middle school and had a really limited education. So he really didn't have an understanding of what to do and how to pull resources and how to do any of the things. Like, no researching. He just didn't know.
Yeah.
So instead, he kind of just went on there and professed his innocence. He suffered through the trial. And to no surprise, it didn't go well.
Yeah.
He made an opening statement to the jury, cross-examined the state's witnesses, presented witnesses in his own defense, and declined to testify himself.
Okay.
He did make a short argument emphasizing his innocence to the charge contained in the information filed in the case. So he was able to kind of...
I mean, if you're smart enough to not... I feel like if you're smart enough to not testify yourself, like, you're doing okay.
Yeah.
That's half the battle.
So, not too bad.
Yeah.
In August of 1961, he was convicted of larceny and sentenced to 5 years in a state prison.
Okay.
Larceny because it was the jukebox change. So there's some weird laws going on with jukebox change.
Gotcha.
Also alcohol too, a little bit. But, yeah. Mostly they made a point to say it was because he stole change out of the jukebox. Okay. Now, while in jail, Gideon began to get interested in law and wanted to know more. He started reading about the Sixth Amendment and realized he'd been fucking shafted.
Oh, shit. Okay.
He believed that the judge who saw his case violated his rights.
Sure.
So Gideon filed in the Florida Supreme Court this habeas corpus attacking his conviction and sentence on the grounds the trial court's refusal to appoint counsel for him denied him his rights, quote, guaranteed by the Constitution and the Bill of Rights by the United States government. Treating the petition for habeas corpus as properly before it, the state Supreme Court, upon consideration thereof, but without an opinion, denied all relief. So.
Okay.
Mouthful. But basically, under the Sixth Amendment, you have the right to be represented.
Yeah.
Now, Florida is Florida, and they approached things in a different manner.
Mm-hmm.
They believed that that is only the case for things that have to do with federal law.
Oh, no.
Yeah. They're like,
that's what? No, that's not Florida. Yeah. That's not how that works.
They're like, it's a state's right issue.
That is not a state's rights issue. Listen, Florida, this is how we got to where we are now. This is not a state's rights issue. Uh-huh. This is a human being's issue.
Uh-huh.
Fucking Florida. Okay.
So after the Florida Supreme Court denied, Gideon appealed to the United States Supreme Court in a suit against the Secretary of the Florida of Department of Corrections, H.G. Cochran.
Okay.
Now, Cochran had retired when this went to the Supreme Court and was replaced by Louis Wainwright. So that's why the case is Gideon versus Wainwright. So Gideon argued in his appeal that he had been denied counsel and then therefore that his Sixth Amendment rights obviously were refused. And as applied to, he had been violated. So he was like bringing out all this knowledge he learned in jail, like, oh, fucking, look at, I know the Sixth Amendment, and Florida doesn't. So, for the Supreme Court case, he was able to get a lawyer appointed to him, because the law.
Yeah.
And that lawyer was Abe Fortas. So, Abe Fortas was representing him, and Fortas argued that a common man with no training in law could not go up against a trained lawyer and win, and that you cannot have a fair trial without counsel.
Sounds right.
Sounds just.
Yep.
The attorney general argued that it was a state issue.
It's not a state issue.
Not a federal one. No. That beautiful old chestnut, states' rights. Under the existing framework, a magistrate in a preliminary hearing determined whether there was a, quote, special circumstance in the case meriting that the defendant receive counsel. That was their argument.
Oh, my God. Fucking stupid.
But Fortas highlighted that determination occurred too early in this case to be of any use.
Okay.
For example, whether a witness's statement should be barred because it was hearsay is an extremely complicated issue that no layman could readily confront. And such a situation arises only during a trial. So it's a witness, you know, mm-hmm. there's so many, you know, loopholes and things, and a witness isn't exactly the point in which a case should be determined on, you know, right?
Right.
So a common person wouldn't know that.
Yeah.
Wouldn't know how to approach that and talk about it and go around it and get a witness maybe thrown out or have it questioned further.
Yeah, hearsay is like a very complicated issue.
Another example that he used in his arguments for this was Fortas noted that when Clarence Darrow, who was widely known as the greatest criminal attorney in the United States, was charged with jury tampering and subpoena perjury, the first thing he did was get a lawyer to represent himself. And Fortas stated that if a lawyer as prominent as Darrow needed an attorney to represent him in criminal proceedings, then a man without a legal education or any education for that matter needed a lawyer too.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very good point.
Solid fucking argument.
Very good point.
However, all of that stuff that Florida was trying to do did not work. So,
good.
In 1963, March of 1963, the United States Supreme Court ruled in Gideon's favor.
Good.
Their opinion were that lawyers are necessary in court proceedings, not luxuries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Duh.
Like the Sixth Amendment and the fact that we have to have a fucking trial about this.
Also, the idea that, like, literally the federal constitution does not apply to states is, right. Like...
states?
A what?
Rights. Okay.
What? Yeah.
States' rights. Oh, it is God. A state issue.
It's not. It's not. It's not.
The right of one charged with crime to counsel may not be deemed fundamental and essential to fair trials in some countries, but it is in ours, is what they said.
Yeah.
So I'm going to read a little bit more of this opinion because I thought it was just so well fucking put.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes so it's a big paragraph.
Supreme Court opinions can be real fucking bangers.
They can be really great.
They can be bangers.
So they went on to state that from the very beginning, our state and national constitutions and laws have laid great emphasis on procedural and substantive safeguards designed to assure fair trials before impartial tribunals in which every defendant stands equal before the law. This noble ideal cannot be realized if the poor man charged with crime has to face his accusers without a lawyer to assist him. A defendant's need for a lawyer is nowhere better stated than in the moving words of Mr. Justice Sutherland in Powell v. Alabama, quote, "The right to be heard would be, in many cases, of little avail if it did not comprehend the right to be heard by counsel. Even the intelligent and educated layman has small and sometimes no skills in the science of law." No shit. Yeah, yeah. "If charged with crime, he is incapable, generally, of determining for himself whether the indictment is good or bad. He is unfamiliar with the rules of evidence. Left without the aid of counsel, he may be put on trial without a proper charge and convicted upon incompetent evidence or evidence irrelevant to the issue or otherwise inadmissible. He lacks both the skill and knowledge adequately to prepare his defense, even though he have a perfect one. He requires the guiding hand of counsel at every step in the proceedings against him. Without it, though he be not guilty, he faces the danger of conviction because he does not know how to establish his innocence."
Yes.
So I thought that was just a beautiful way that they kind of talked about it.
Yeah.
And it's true. There's just so many intricacies. And even if you do have an understanding of procedure, sometimes there's so many intricacies. That's why lawyers have specializations.
Literally. Yes. I will tell you, like, speaking from experience, going to school for my paralegal and having to take literal law classes. Mm-hmm. Like, you take law classes to learn the law. There was... you know, I thought I had a pretty good baseline knowledge going in. I was so wrong. And so many things I thought I knew, I had just completely wrong. Mm-hmm. And even now, like you said, there's specializations for a reason because there are areas like real estate law. Fuck
so that. So complicated.
Horrible. And business law is like an entirely different thing.
Dealing with inheritances.
Like, yeah, like wills, trusts, and probates is like its own thing. Mm-hmm. And having, because all of those have their own little intricacies and things that, you know, it's.
And you have to think about with some of them, there's like county law, state law, federal law. Like there's so many things.
And even when you're talking criminal law, you have specializations within criminal law. So there will be people who do just like DUIs or just like misdemeanors or just, you know, so you can't, it, you cannot expect the average person to have any clue about any of it whatsoever.
So after this decision and the Supreme Court ruled in his favor, 2,000 people were freed in Florida because of the result of the Gideon decision.
Wow. That many?
2,000 people.
Which I'm assuming.
Who did not have counsel.
They had to make a decision whether they were going to retry those cases or not. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. Oh my God. Wow.
Florida.
Yeah.
Now, the decision did not directly affect Gideon and being freed right away. Instead, because Florida be Florida and they wanted to be like snap back at them, they decided to retry him.
Sure.
Give him a whole new trial. And he was appointed a defense counsel this time. Hooray.
Yeah.
And the government actually paid for it.
Okay.
So, good on ya.
Yeah.
The retrial took place on August 5th, 1963. And Gideon selected W. Fred Turner as his lawyer. Now, during the trial, Turner picked apart the testimony of the eyewitness whose name was Henry Cook, who saw him coming out of the bar, quote unquote.
Oh.
In his opening and closing statements, Turner suggested that Cook likely had been a lookout for a group of young men who broke into the pool room themselves to steal beer and then grabbed the coins while they were there. Turner also obtained a statement from a cab driver who had taken Gideon from Bay Harbor to a bar in Panama City, stating that Gideon was carrying neither wine, nor beer, nor Coca-Cola when he picked him up. And even though Cook testified that he had watched Gideon walk from the pool hall to a payphone and then wait for a cab, the witness had been completely discredited.
Wow.
Surprise. So.
Look what can happen when you have a lawyer.
There is a lot of debate on whether he actually even did any crimes there. After only 1 hour of deliberation, he was acquitted.
Wow. Good.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Mm-hmm. I mean, seriously, like, look what can happen when you have a good lawyer.
Yeah.
Like, exactly. Even just a minorly competent one.
Mm-hmm.
There are some, I will say, some really bad lawyers out there.
There are.
But there are some really good ones, too. Mm-hmm. Like,
you gotta, you know, shop around.
Yeah.
That sounds awful.
You do have to shop around. You do have to shop around. But, I mean, even just having any representation, like, there was no way he would have. Oh, my God. That's crazy. It just is, the whole thing is just wild to me.
Yeah. I wanted to kind of end this a little bit with a quote here because. After this Supreme Court ruling, Florida then required public defenders in all of its circuit courts.
Duh.
So everyone would be having a lawyer.
Sure.
And this happened in 1963. Robert Kennedy, if you know him, RFK.
No.
He actually made a public statement about this case because he was very much about human rights. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of what he worked on in his, you know, way to trying to become a nominee for president.
Yeah.
He stated, if an obscure Florida, I have to do it in my RFK voice. If an obscure Florida convict named Clarence Earl Gideon had not sat down in prison with a pencil and paper to write a letter to the Supreme Court, and if the Supreme Court had not taken the trouble to look into the merits into the one crude petition among all the bundles of mail it must receive every day, the vast machinery of American law would have gone on functioning undisturbed. But Gideon did write that letter. The court did look into that case, and he was retried with the help of competent defense counsel, found not guilty, and released from prison after 2 years of punishment for a crime he did not commit. And the whole course of legal history has been changed.
That's pretty good, Kennedy.
Thank you. I went off a little crazy into my radio voice a little bit. But
yeah.
So after the case, Gideon returned to his everyday life and married again for a fifth time. He remained in Florida for a while and died of cancer in 1972 and was put to rest back in his home of Missouri.
Wow.
But that is the case of Gideon V. Wainwright, and now why Florida has to have public defenders for everyone.
Florida and the entirety of the United States.
Yes. But specifically...
Florida.
A little bit of a thumb up to Florida. I thumb at you, sir.
I wouldn't be surprised, like, if we found out that happened, like, all over the South. Like, that seems like...
1,000%. Yeah, I guarantee it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that seems like some
real Southern purposefully bullshit. Given incompetent counsel has happened a lot.
Yes.
That's been the basis of many a books written by many a true crime authors.
Yes. Yeah. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That's wild.
Yeah. I was looking for other cases, too, just like you. I was like, well, has anyone been successful in this? And then I came across this particular case, and I was like, oh, it's a landmark case about, defense. And I thought it was so interesting that he was forced to represent himself and did a decent job.
Yeah.
Considering.
Yeah.
It's true. He was able to go to jail and realize that his fucking rights were violated.
I know.
A man with a middle school education.
Get it. Right? Get it, homie. Yeah. And to answer that question, not very many people have successfully defended themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very, very few, because it's hard. Yeah. But if you are thinking of defending yourself in your court,
don't do it.
First of all, get an attorney. This is not legal advice, but just get a fucking attorney.
This is just life advice. Yeah. Always get an attorney. No matter what. Even if you know you don't need one.
Get one. But also listen to this podcast.
Hi, I'm Lainey, host of the new podcast, We're All Just Pretending. It's a podcast that has elements of Dear Abby with a twist of Post Secret. Every episode, I'll read listener questions and provide advice and insight as a friend. My own pod friends will even join in and offer their advice on parenting, relationships, and even give you really bad advice on purpose. Since we all have secrets to share, there'll also be a segment focusing on letting the skeletons out of your closet. If you're looking for advice or want to share a secret, head to allpretendingpod.com. And remember, we're all just pretending here.
All right, Janelle, that has been our episode.
Well, I don't plan on doing any crimes lately, but you know.
No.
Always layer up. Like wear a condom. Always layer up.
It's true. Don't be a fool. Call your lawyer.
Wrap up that case with a lawyer.
So we'll be back in 2 weeks. I mean, there's really not that much going on, except just
happy
podcasting.
Happy holidays.
I forget when this is coming out, but please just be safe. Make good choices.
Mm-hmm. Is that a thing still?
Try not to like fight too much with the family.
Yeah. No familicide this holiday season.
I would love a familicide free holiday. Thank you.
If you feel like you're going to murder your family, take a deep breath.
Take a walk.
Grab a bottle of wine. Go outside. Take a walk.
Take a walk.
Take a walk. Take a lap. Do a lap.
Do a lap. Come back.
Do a no familicide lap and come back.
Oh, my God. Do you have anything else before we end the episode?
No, that's the sage advice I have because, you know, the holidays are a trying and traumatic time.
That's tough. On that note, our sound and editing is by Tiff Fullman. Our music is by Jason Zakshevsky, The Enigma.
So much hype.
This has been the Bad Taste Crime Podcast. We will see you in 2 weeks. Goodbye.
I demand a lawyer.
Beam me up, Mr. Speaker. Beam me up.
It was as if a wave of evil washed over this town.
We are all evil in some form or